That was the right answer. Okay, good. W2TTT here. It's Gordon. And we'll use the call sign KGBAR W2TTT as the control operator. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. It's a conversation. It's open to all radio amateurs who would like to participate. We hope all of you will. You need not be a member of BARA. You only have to have a license that allows you to operate the 2-meter band. It's really, really important to hear from you tonight. And the reason why it's important to hear from you tonight is because we may want to direct a question to you or ask you your opinion, or at least be able to address the topics in a manner that might be consistent with your understanding of technology and other things that amateur radio touches. Amateur radio touches a lot of different things. Touches computers, electronics, electricity, telecommunications in general. Touches weather, space weather. Talks about helping others in the service. It talks about having a lot of fun, doing all sorts of interesting things. It really is an amazing hobby. Which is why it's so attractive to so many diverse kinds of people, because it offers so many diverse things, so many diverse opportunities. So with that in mind, there really is no reason why you shouldn't check in. That's the way we hope that you will. So here's how this works. Swap and shop or for sale item, or any and all of the above, or none of the above. That's pretty much how it works. And we'll do this. We take that lot roster, and then we'll start grinding through the list and see what we got. And it should be fun. I want to point out that I have a couple of comments tonight, which I'm going to make up toward the top of the net after a couple of other fellows make their comments. And before we go to questions, to kind of spur some conversation. So, with no further ado, are there any stations with a alpha call wishing to check in? Please give your name, your call sign, your name, and indicate whether you have a question, comment, stop and shop or for sale, any and all of the above, and none of the above. Please call KTBARW2TTT.
N2OEL disconnected. N2OEL disconnected. Connected. N2OEL.
Well, let's just check with Noel since he's there. N2OEL, are you checking into the net tonight? KTBAR.
That's one way to check in, but I didn't mean to.
Yeah, really. It was quite a display of your presence and absence, or absence, absence, and presence. So what are your intentions for this evening, sir?
I'm going to tell you all about a new ATT product that has been positioned, I believe, to match the competing Verizon product, but which I love.
And I hope you love the ATT product, and you can explain why you love it more than the comparable Verizon product that you alluded to. I don't even know what it is. So, full disclosure, I do work for AT&T, folks. I did not put him up to this. I have no idea what he's talking about. But, Noel, I'll make note that you have something you'd like to discuss later. Commentary. Good. Thank you for doing that. So I'll note that. And are there any other November stations? Okie dokie. How about those Whiskey Twos, or Whiskeys?
The 2JEK, Don with a comment.
Don, I got your comment. Any other Whiskeys?
November, my name is Rick with a question.
WLCN, I got you with a question. Very good, Rick. Anybody else with a Whiskey?
You do feel it, Charlie? None of the above, or no comment.
Okay, W2JC, you doubled somebody, and well, you won. You didn't win cleanly. Jim, what are your intentions?
None of the above at the moment. Later in the net, I may have some comments, sir.
Roger, and who is the station who doubled with you?
WE2R, Charlie, no questions or comments.
Evening, Charles. Good to hear you. Any other whiskeys? Very good. Any other, let's see, we've done Novembers, we've done whiskeys, we've done Alphas. Let's do Kilo 2s.
K2BAR, this is K2ZO. And I have a question, and I guess I also have a comment, whatever. Back to you, this is K2ZO.
Hey James, long time no hear. We haven't heard you reliably on that for a while. Tied up. Good to hear you back. Excellent. Any other Kilo 2s? Okie dokie. How about any other Kilos? That's a small net tonight. Any other stations we should check into that?
KC2, UNH, mobile. One comment.
KC2, UNH, good evening, Paul. With a comment. All right, anybody else with any call sign?
Charlie, Dave, no questions, no comments.
Okay, Dave, I got you. No questions, no comments, correct?
That's correct.
Audio's just a little low, but okay, very good. And who was the station who came in with you? All right, someone came in with K2Z, Zulu Charlie. Who was that? Are there any other stations we should check into that? Alrighty. Let me say to everybody good evening. Hope everybody's been wrapping into the new year pretty well. I got my little scanning receiver in the background, and that's why you hear little beep bops and ba-dopes. Next transmission or two, I'll bring that audio down so you don't have to listen to that. But I'm running spectral sweeps every 10 kilohertz between like 30 or 50 kilohertz and 8.5 megahertz, which is kind of fun. And interesting what you see in the way of signal amplitude and gets little snippets of. In any case, got some interesting ideas playing with. One is I've been, you know, Jim Jackson and I were playing with the Raspberry Pi little mini Linux machines, little handheld jobs, and I found on the internet an inexpensive, like $6 to $10, depending on what who you buy it from, temperature probe, and plugs into a USB port, and there's a little piece of Python code that's out there that you can use to take temperature readings from it. Doesn't take much to run, and this is kind of cool, very, very cool, making that go. I haven't got the temperature probe yet, but I do have the Raspberry Pi working pretty well. See, really ironic that the keyboard and the monitor, which are both small, are still massively larger than the CPU board, which is literally, you know, about the size of your fist, maybe a little smaller. That's one kind of cool thing I've been unkeying here. Sorry about that, guys. And the other thing is, Boy Scouts of America announced the other day that there is a new rating strip, they call it, that goes on your right sleeve of your uniform that says Amateur Radio Operator. And they were following with what the Australian and Dutch Scouts did recently as well. This is kind of something new that's kind of flooding around. Now, there's a language strip that goes on the front of the uniform over the pocket for if you speak a different language. And somebody a few years ago thought it would be a great idea to have a translator strip for the language called the International Morse Code. So there is a strip that spells out in printed CW, M-O-R-S-E, which I think is rather cute. But as a licensed amateur radio operator, it's pretty cool to have that on your shoulder, in your right shoulder, and it helps designate you as a ham in a group. So that's kind of cool. So just thought you guys might be interested in knowing that. If you happen to talk to other people involved in scouting or venturing, they can use that. So I think let's get on with the business at hand. Noel, your comment first, sir. N2OEL, KTBAR.
K2BAR in the group, this is N2OEL. I recently discovered a Verizon device that is supposed to replace the home telephone, and they charged $20 a month, and I said, gee, that's too bad. Maybe I can talk my sister into getting one, since I have AT&T now with my new cell. And going through one of these magazines, I found an ad for the AT&T competing product, WS720. This little thing is about the size of, six packs of cigarettes laid down with an antenna sticking out. It looks like a little router, basically. Anyways, got a battery in that's supposed to allegedly last 10 hours if the power goes out. I actually said, gee, this is not bad. They're advertising for $10 if you have a family share plan. If you don't, but you have a Verizon cell phone, I'm sorry, AT&T cell phone, it's $20 a month. But they say you can take it with you in your RV or your vacation home. They say unlimited nationwide calling to and from any place in the continental United States. Well, said me, this is great. So I go over to the AT&T store in Paramus there on Route 4, just before you hit 17, and I say, okay, can you do this? And he says, sure, we can put your home phone number on it. So when I go south, if I use a cell phone to call you, for instance, at, say, 6 o'clock in the evening, I'd use up my precious minutes. If I use this thing, it would say, it was Noel from 201 and my home phone number, just call it, and I would use no minutes. And I said, whoa, this is just going to be this thing. Then when I go upstate, I take it with me. When I'm here, and I can hook my complete home phone system, which is cordless and got four remotes, and I can put them any place I want. If I'm up in the house in Dundee, beautiful. If I'm down here, beautiful. Back to that. This is
that is a neat little choice. So let me kind of elaborate a little bit. What it does is it uses the cellular uplink as a data pipe and basically takes your home phone, turns it into a VoIP or voice over IP connection over a wireless connection, types it through the magic of AT&T's cellular network to where it meets a boundary, which we'll call a gateway, which is for the for the processing of VoIP to what they call public switch telephone network or PSTN standard telephony, and away you go. On your family side or your business side, what you get to do is you get to have one or more appearances of a phone number or phone numbers and access them from something that plugs into an RJ11 just like any other wall jack, except that the other side of it instead of wire is the wireless network. So it's kind of slick in that regard. So the whole thing is wireless. In fact, if you have cordless phones, you go cordless to the base station in your house, the base station to this VoIP telephone adapter, across the wireless network to a thing called an IMS, and from the IMS you go into the public switch telephone network to whoever you're talking to. It's pretty cool. So anybody else have any comments about it? Okay, well, Noel, I'll throw it back to you, but it's a marvelous little device, and yeah, you can take your phone number with you.
Well, what I liked about it is the battery's supposedly for 10 hours. So I picked it up, disconnected from the charger, went over to Tony's house, and borrowed his ancient handset. Well, it wasn't quite the Princess phone. It's one of these garish Slimline phones with all the inside different colors. And we plug it in, and lo and behold, you can make and receive calls. And I was surprised the audio quality is there. I have no complaints from the people I'm talking to about audio quality. And, you know, if somebody, and it runs off 5 volts, so the adapters get put in 5 volts in. So I'm thinking to myself, you know, if somebody was a traveling salesperson or somebody that was, there's no reason you couldn't put a 5 volt adapter, toss this thing in your car, and for $20 a month, you could be on a minimum plan, basically, and have unlimited cell phone service. And I'm sure it's, with the size of this antenna, I'm sure it's got to be much more powerful than any cell phone that you could use. It's got to be more powerful. Gordon, you can tell us, it's probably got a 1-watt transmitter compared to 100 milliwatts in a cell phone. I really don't know what the relative strength is, but I'm sure you could tell us. Back to that, this is it.
Okay, well, I can tell you that it does not have a 1-watt output, at least not continuously. There's generally no need for that, but I think it can go up to about that, at least theoretically. So good for you. That's most excellent. It is an LTE device or 4G device. It's pretty nifty and does offer wonderful quality. I have not gone to doing that yet. I will probably do that in the future. Let me also throw something else at you. Because it's a VoIP line, it is no longer a PSTN line, therefore no longer subject to the it's no longer subject to the excise taxes and connectivity taxes, the FCC levies. It works somewhat differently, and you can actually save yourself money. I actually did that with my Fios service recently. By upgrading my Fios service, I actually, instead of increasing my bill like $30 a month, I increased it maybe $14 a month or something, because certain other fees were no longer applicable, which is kind of cool, even though I was up my service bandwidth. Anybody else have comments about this or voice over IP or similar services?
Do you on it?
Go right ahead, Paul.
Yeah, the other thing you've got to remember on that is that you're off the 911 grid. You're on E911, so you can call them, but they can't trace where you are.
I'm not so sure. Now, I'm trying to remember whether that base station has the GPS built into it. Noel, does that base have a GPS built into it?
Gordon, it doesn't tell me. It warns me in the instruction manual about the 911 service. I'd have to tell them what address. So I would presume not. I would presume there's nothing that says it has a GPS, nothing in the documentation. So I presume it would be the same as one of these little things that you plug in, whatever the heck they call it, that substitutes, or Skype, or any of those other things that's over IP. I don't think that they're going to find you too easy. But it warns me no data either. However, I suspect that my alarm system would work, because my alarm system is basically an audio thing. Bethanet.
That's right. They're no longer looking for copper conductivity in the more modern alarms. In fact, they really want to see IP connectivity, but that's the next step. Very good. All right. So, like, for instance, in my microcell, my 3G microcell, which is a wireless, a mobility extension device. That's a, if you will, a mobility base station that's, all to me. Basically, I can take that and run voice or data through it, and it does determine where I am, and it does have an embedded GPS. I'll have to look in that product. What's the model number again, Noel?
Model number is W's in Water, F is in Frank, 720. WF720.
All right, well, I'll look it up in a moment. There are some concerns about being off the, or having trouble with the, E911, but in general, that can be addressed. That there really is not a super big problem. But you do have to tell it, essentially where you are. If you don't do that, then, essentially shame on you. All right. So I'm looking through this in a minute. I'll do this. We were offered to have those, and I just haven't done it yet because, as I said, I had just switched over my my Fios service to their higher upgrade. I'm running 150 meg down and seeing that, by the way, and about 65 up, and I'm seeing as much as about 70 or so up, by the way, which is kind of cool. So this base station is an 850 1900 megahertz system. It's GSM and UMTS, so there you go. So I misspoke. It is not an LTE device. Got ahead of myself, as it were. But, they're not very expensive, to say the least, and they're very much worth your while. Alrighty, let's see. I'll see if there's a... Any further questions on this subject? Alright. Well, Noel, I'll let you put the ribbons on the topic and you can go from there.
Did you just toss it back to me? Well, Tony and I are looking online at the specifications. Approximate battery life standby, 36 hours. Approximate battery life talk, 1.5 hours. North America 850 megahertz and the 1900 megahertz bands, GSM and UMTS, whatever the heck that means. It only weighs 14.11 ounces. That's not bad. That's not bad at all. I like it. It's a nice toy. It'll be a valuable addition for somebody who's on the road. Hopefully, as I will be shortly, as soon as we can get this house to close.
The house up north?
Yes. And so, yeah.
Okay, very good. Anybody else before we move on? Okay, well, very good. Don, W2A, off to you, K2BAR.
K2BAR and the net W2JEK, good evening, everybody. Just want to announce that tomorrow night, Dara will be running a VE test session at 7 p.m. at the Westwood Regional High School in classroom number 123. So, anybody's interested, let me know now or get in touch with me some other way. Back to net, W2JK.
Thank you, Don. Anybody have any questions about tomorrow's test session or any other licensing-related issue? Okie dokie. Thank you, Don. Any last comments before we move on?
No, that's all for now. W2JEK back.
Okay, very good. All right, KCJUNH. Over to you, Paul, KCBAR.
K2BAR, KT2EN, Hedge.
Yeah, just a small one to sort of, I sent you an email following up on your Windows 8 install. I came across the Microsoft Home Update site that will allow you to buy Windows Office 2013 Professional, which is the fully loaded, for the great price of $995. The only caveat is that your employer has to subscribe to the Microsoft service. So if you're in a big company, for a lot of people, you should be just putting your email address in. They'll send you a link. You can buy it and download it. Unlike Windows 8, I think the Office 2013 should be a lot more stable, a lot more, you know, same as last time. Not too many bells and whistles changing, but seems like a good deal. Watch that.
It is a good deal. Now, someone had brought it to my attention a couple of months back, and my company had not circulated the flyer for that, if you will, electronically, and they subsequently did, and I jumped on it immediately, and let me tell you, it's nice. You only get, I think, two installs, two, maybe three, but you only get one purchase. But it does allow you to put it on more than one platform, which I think is kind of neat. So I was very, very pleased. I am running Office 2013 on my main desktop machine at home. Ironically, I'm not running that on my work machine yet, and all my other laptops and such like that are running Office 2003. I'm using 2007 at home. I mean at work. 2013 on this one desktop, which, and I will be using 13 shortly at work, by the way, but I'm still using Office 2003 or 2003 Student and Teacher Edition in some cases on all the other little machines I have, which is pretty wild. I run compatibility packs, and that generally allows me at least to read. I can't edit in those modes. Sometimes, occasionally, I manage to feature some things, but overall it works pretty well, so I can't complain. Has anyone else tried that corporate purchase opportunity? Okay, I don't want everybody to jump at once. All right, well, Paul, thank you for mentioning it, and guys, keep an eye out for it. If you have a family member who's not likely to use it, let's say you have a wide-eyed Apple family or something, child or relative, and, you know, to have them watch for the corporate email to see if their site works. I'm more than happy to send you the link I have, or the link Paul has, to the site, and I think you can enter your company name and figure it out, but, it has to be done by the employee, I think. I was also able to pick up a copy of Visio separately for an additional $10, and I did buy the disk to reinstall the stuff myself in case something blows up, so that was another $10, well worth it again. So, but this is the full-blown professional edition minus Visio, and Visio is no longer part of the Office suite. They consider that something else, but a lot of people like Visio in my world. I'm not a big Visio guy, but it's nice to be able to cooperate and edit and have a tool that that's the same as some of your colleagues when they decide to go nuts on you with Visio. All right. Anybody else on this subject or related subjects?
Comments or questions. Hopefully some people will pop up on the VHF contest this weekend, starting Saturday, 2 p.m. FM or single sideband or digital, any of the modes will work.
Yeah, about the only frequencies you can't use are repeater inputs and outputs and 146.52. You can use any other simplex frequency on 2 meters. You can use any simplex frequency, including national calling frequencies, on the other bands. You can't use 146.52, which I think is kind of a mistake at this point. No longer 1976 or 77. I think it's time to go back to that. But anyway, alas. All right, well, thank you. Anybody have any comments for Bennett about the VHF contest? It starts at 2 p.m., by the way. It goes to 11 p.m. on Sunday. So Saturday, 2 p.m., Sunday, 11 p.m. All right, make sure you do send a log to WA2LXE. Mr. Phil is our club coordinator for club operations. He'd love to see your log. All righty. With that in mind, let us go to W2LCN. Mr. Rick, over to you, KTBAR.
All right. Hello, Gordon. This is W2LCN. The name is Rick. The question I have is kind of in two parts. As you guys know, I got an Icon 746, and Gordon was nice enough to set me up with a 40-meter dipole that I have in an NBIS configuration. What I'd like to do is get up onto the 80-meter band and possibly put up an 80-meter inverted V dipole antenna. When I went to tune the 40-meter, in line with the VHF contest that was coming up, I went down to the 6-meter band and I wasn't able to tune it. So my question is two parts. If I'd like to go up to the 80-meter band antenna, what's the best way to do that? I'm about 25 feet high and I can fit it with about 15 feet on either end. And I have the ability to put in two antennas on the 746 Pro. So where would I make that split and how would I do it so I could cover the band more effectively? I'll send it back to Nick.
Okay, so I'm a little confused by your question. So you're wanting to use your an 80-meter antenna. No, I'm not going to try to repeat this. You want an 80-meter antenna, or you want a 6-meter antenna, or do you want both?
I have the opportunity to do two antennas. What I'd like to do is I notice I can't broadcast on 80 meters. The antenna tuner won't tune it. I have the wire, and I have the space, and now that I have the antenna moved outdoors, I have the availability to put an antenna up at about 26 feet high, and I'd like to do that. So I'm thinking I would like to put up an 80-meter inverted V antenna to cover 80 meters through, and then that's the second question. Where do I make that cutoff so that I can get down to the 6-meter side of things, the 6-meter and 10-meter and some of the other bands? What would be a good way to make that split, or can I just simply cover that with the tuner and an 80-meter dipole antenna?
Well, it just so happens we have Mr. OCF himself here who will answer your question. My guess is with an OCF kind of answer, but I may be wrong. K2ZO, K2BAR, would you take this question, please?
Okay, very good. K2BAR. This is K2ZO. If you want an antenna that will cover all of those bands, feed it off center, okay? The problem that you have when you feed the antenna in the center is that on some bands you have a wildly high impedances and you just can't get a match. By feeding it one-third off, in other words, multiply the length by 0.333, and feeding at that point the 80 meter and or a 40, you can do it. Now the impedance at that point is about 200 ohms. You'll need a 4-to-1 balance. It will work on 6 meters. You'll probably have some loss. You have an antenna tuner. If the antenna tuner has a balance in it, what I would suggest that you do is make yourself an off-center fed, set it up as an inverted V. One side's going to be longer than the other. feed it at the, you know, take the 468 divided by the frequency times 0.333 to get the offset position there. Feed it with 300 ohm and or 400, whatever, but 300 ohm will be better, better match. Use the tuner, use the ballon and the tuner, and it will work from 80 meters to 6 meters and include the walk bands. You will definitely need the tuner on the walk bands. On 80 and 40 and most of the other bands, you get away without the tuner. This is K2ZO. Back to that.
Thank you, Jim. Rick, do you want to comment on that?
Absolutely. K2ZO, thank you. You just blown my mind, and I love it. Okay, so I'm looking at an off-center fed dipole antenna set up in that inverted V configuration with a 4-to-1 balun. Now, I've heard you mention before current baluns and other types of baluns. Is there a specific type of balun? And you also mentioned feeding it with 300 or 400 ohm impedance feed line. Can you just clarify what that is? I'm basically familiar with like RG8, so I don't really know what I'm looking for to find that type of feed line for this particular setup. It sounds like a great option. Thank you. I think this is great. This is W2LCN. I'll send it back over to K2ZO.
Okay, W2LCN, K2ZO. Okay, what I do is I have the balun outside. I have a 4-to-1 current balun. Go look at balun designs. Do a search on Google, you'll find it. And a current balun actually forces the current to be the same on either side rather than a transformer balun, which when the impedance doesn't kind of match, it gets squirrely. Anyway, 300 ohm twin lead is what we used to feed our TV antennas with. Low power, you can use the same stuff. High power, you can buy the kilowatt version of it from the wire man. Why do I say 300 ohm kilowatt twin lead? Well, you can buy it from the wire man, and of course it'll match much more closer than 450. The whole idea is you want the impedance not to vary that much. So by matching the impedance, which is a couple of hundred ohms, to the feed line, which is a couple of hundred ohms, you can get away with a simple balun down at the bottom. Rather than running the stuff in the house, I put a 4-to-1 balun outside. I also use a 1-to-1. Works just as well because I can do it with the tuner. And do a little search, off-center fed dipole, balun designs, and do a thing for current balun, and you'll get some ideas. But that's the antenna that I use. I pump a kilowatt into it. I run the net on 10 meters with it. I work the X on all the other bands with it, and it works quite well. And I can tune it on every band except 160 from 80 to 6 meters, including the walk bands. This is K2ZO. Back to you.
All right, so I think I understand that this wouldn't happen to be the same information you put out a while back. You designed something for the Boy Scouts, I believe, for the Jamboree on the Air. That was a portable antenna-type setup. This isn't the same one of, I know it's an off-center fed that you were referring to. Does that match this type of configuration?
Well, that was a 40-meter one, okay? And that one worked on every band from 40 to 6. It does work on 80, but it's not as efficient as if it was a full 80. But believe it or not, it does work, and we've used it that way. But, that's exactly what I used. And fed it with open wire line, the balun down at the bottom, and off we went. Same antenna.
All right, great. This is, that's terrific. You just helped me out quite a bit. Thank you very much. I'm going to send it back over to Gordon. That pretty much answers my question here. This is W2LCN. Back to you, Gordon.
Okay, very good. Anybody else want to chime in here with a question or a comment on this topic? God is my witness, Jim. We haven't had an OCF question in 2 months. You show up and there it comes like a freight train. It's amazing. I was actually thinking, I said, man, we haven't talked about the OCF idea in a long time. I wonder why. Bam, there it is. All right. Well, very good. This is wonderful. Okay. So, Jim, did you want to put any additional ribbons on that conversation? Other than to emphasize that it's a current balance?
If you do a Google search, you'll find all of the information I'm talking to you about. It's nothing that I came up with. Other people have done it. But it just turns out that it's a very usable antenna. And it's a very nice old band antenna and a great portable antenna, a great field day antenna. And I like it quite a bit. And of course, if you can elect to use it as with a ballon and feed it with coax, but then you really run some high SWR on some bands and you have some losses. By using the low loss open wire feed line, you have no loss as such or very minimal, and that's why it works so well. And great little QRP type thing. Use a small ballon and throw it up and off you go. That's it. Back to that K2Zo.
Outstanding. Yep, and it all that information you need for it is in fact floating around on the internet. It's not hard. Just Google OCF dipole and pick a design, as Jim says, that uses the twin lead all the way down. I'm kind of getting away from the microphone here. Sorry about that. But yeah, that's key for the lower loss. You'll be a lot happier with that. Alrighty. Kind of curious if there's anybody else who wants to comment on this. Alrighty. Well, very good. Jim, thank you again. That's marvelous. Alrighty. Rick, did you have anything else that you want to follow on with?
No, I guess I'm looking at things on the internet right now. Is there any links I should be concerned about? I've got to go for about a 75-foot run of feed line to get out of the shack up to the point that I'm going to be on off where I've got the antenna set up. Is there any concern over the length of that feed line? And what's the... I'm obviously not going to reach it. I'm going to be about 26 feet at its feed point, but... do I have any concerns that you might throw my way? Other than that, I will find it on the internet if you don't have that available. But again, thank you very much. You've helped me out considerably. I'll send it back to you.
Okay, one of the comments I have about the feed line is that when you pick a feed line that matches the feed point impedance, that's what the off-center fed antenna is all about. What happens is that the feed point, the length of the feed line becomes less of a problem. It does factor in sometimes, and you may have to change it if you have a particular tuner that won't tune it. In my case, with the situation I have, the antennas that we use with about a 45, 50 feet of feed line, I was able to tune them with just the tuner and the radio, which turns off at like 3 to 1. So that worked out quite well. But with the center-fed antenna, it's very squirrely when you get to impedances like 4,000 ohms trying to feed a 40-meter signal into an 80-meter antenna. So this avoids all that problem. And that's basically the whole idea. It's not that it's super great in terms of radiation because you're still using the same piece of wire, but it allows you to match it better, and that's the whole secret. K2Zo, back in it.
All right, this is W2LPN. I guess I'll just pick it up and then send it back over to Gordon. Thank you very much. This is great information. It was going in a different direction, but it sounds like this is going to accomplish my goal a little bit easier and smarter. So I'll send it back over to Gordon. This is W2LCN. Thank you very much, guys.
Yeah, Jim, tomorrow we're going to be up on like maybe a 15-foot high deck with the ability to put some of those military poles up. And I'm thinking, I got to go check the 40-meter version's dimensions. Maybe I'll throw one of those up instead of a 40-meter dipole. I think that might be kind of a better way to go. Very good. Just curious, is NS2K on frequency?
Did I hear my call sign, NS2K?
No, I didn't, but
at your leisure, could you remind me what the Raspberry Pi login and password are?
Raspberry Pi. Actually, admin. Oh, goodness. Raspberry Pi or admin Pi. Root and Pi. There we go.
Oh, root and Pi. Okay. Thank you. I will try that. I'm doing that as we speak and see if that works. No, it did not work.
Just running around the house here, hooking up a Nest.
Ah, okay. We'll come back to this question and to your Nest. But we'll get you next. My question is about the Raspberry Pi. I've got it sitting here, and I can't seem to log into it. I remember that's what my problem was before. I forgot what the login was. Anyway, I'm using my little 9-inch monitor with it. It's really kind of cute, actually. Alrighty. So, K2ZO, it is your turn. K2BAR.
Okay. I have a kind of a little question and an observation, whatever. This is K2ZO. I was recently working on an Astron power supply. And unfortunately, the fellow had it, had it some shorted diodes, and he put a new set of diodes in. Unfortunately, he put them in backwards. The filter capacitor got rather hot. Hot to the point where you couldn't touch it. I wonder if an electrolytic would survive that. Anyway, but that's my observation. I wonder if anybody would comment on that. But anyway, in looking at it, and then looking at my own and remembering some of the other things, I noticed that the negative side of that Astron supply was grounded. Now, I notice on many other supplies, they're not grounded. Personally, I think I would prefer to have it not grounded and have the thing grounded, let's say, at the radio, because if you go into the radio with your plus and minus, your minus is grounded in the radio, at least in most radios. The idea is that I thought you'd always want to have the one ground at one point. Now, my switching supplies, Astron switching supply, does not have a ground on it. However, my 20 and my 35, both have a ground off the negative, the minus 13.8, going right to the same ground that the AC goes to. I wonder what and why they did that. My IOTA supplies, which are designed to go across the battery if you want to, but I use them, of course, for radios, but they will go off a battery, no problem, and charge it without the Astron wall, without modification. But anyway, those don't have any grounding on the negative lead. What do you think? This is K2ZO, back to that.
That's really odd. So I'm trying to paint a mental picture here. The Astrons are not switchers. They're iron supplies. Aren't most of your other supplies that you mentioned switchers?
Yes, and of course, by being switchers, they're much later in design rather than a linear. However, I do have a Yaesu linear type supply, which is not grounded in the negative lead. And but yet, if you look at some of the standard, what we've been using for years, the Astron 10, 12, 20, and 30 type amp supplies, they are all grounded. They actually have a jumper that goes from the negative side of the DC coming out right to the same, to the ground on the three-wire plug. How about that?
Yeah, so they're grounded as well. Interesting. Wonder why the dichotomy, though.
Well, I don't know. they figure that your negative is going to be grounded anyway in the radio. And for most applications, it probably makes no difference at all. How I found out about it is using a piece of equipment that has reverse polarity. In other words, the center pin on the connector, the little DC connector, is negative, and the case is positive. I'm talking about a Kenwood SWR meter. And, of course, when you hook that up to this thing, you get a little excitement there.
Ooh, so repeat which ones have the are reversed again, just so people, you know, process that?
It's the dual meter Kenwood SW2000. I have a few of them here. They're very good SWR meters, and, of course, they do indicate PEP. Why on earth Kenwood decided to wire them that way is beyond me, and there's no reference in the book. The center pin of the connector is negative, and the ground is positive. So guess what happened when I tried to hook it up? And that's how we discovered the first time that these things were grounded on a negative lead. Of course, now I use a separate wall wart, the problem has gone away. But the interesting thing, they just brought it up to me, was working on this power supply, and again, seeing the fact that there's a bus grounding the negative lead of the 13.8 on the power supply. You know, I would prefer a single ground off the radio, you know, for RF purposes and feedback and hum, because if you look at it, this negative lead going to the radio is now connected to the ground on your AC three-wire cord coming in, and that, you know, might pose a problem. So I don't understand why they did it, but for some reason other people did not. Back to that.
Well, okay, I've dealt with some of these kinds of problems at work. With various products that either are commonly interfaced to our systems or to our components, and in certain cases, certain components from certain of our suppliers that, you know, they just magically get a different subcontractor for, and magically things are different. Such as your mysterious, you know, when is ground not ground and when is negative ground and vice versa, that kind of nonsense. It's very disconcerting. You know, my own opinion is that someone needs to take someone at Kenwood and slap them stupid for producing the wrong kind of power supply. Now, to be clear, that SWR bridge doesn't run on an AC voltage. It runs on a DC voltage from a wall wart, correct? So the situation was correctable by changing out the wall wart, right?
Yeah, no problem once you realize it. However, it's not quite obvious, you know. We've gone through life assuming that little center conductor is positive. It's not marked. But if you do look at the schematic, you'll see that there is a blocking diode, which would kind of give you a clue.
Yeah. That is very disconcerting. I'm kind of curious what ultimately is the operating voltage of the SWR bridge / power meter. Number one, number two, how much current does it take? Number three, how much or what kind of connector goes into the actual device from the cable coming from the wall wart? I have made almost a insane lifestyle change, best way to describe it, to systematically take absolutely anything that will run on 12 volts or something approximating 12 volts and accommodating it to be 12 volts and distributed on Anderson Power Poles. Having said that, I am now embarking on a quest, and the quest is this. do I go 3.3 volts or do I go 5 volts for a lower voltage bus? And if I do that, what color other than red do I pick? I'm inclined to think that the ground should be ground, it should be black for DC. But it's kind of like an allied question to the dilemma you kind of stuck yourself with. I've kind of insulated myself from these nonsensical problems. Most of the time, and I will give you an example of one in a moment, where I had to be extremely careful, but I'm kind of curious as to, what your thoughts are on that, Jim, as to my, shall we say, maniacal pursuit of a 12-volt connectorized world versus a 5-volt versus an AC world. And part of that, by the way, is that I want to run off of, portable power systems and sustainable power systems, things like that. So, back to you.
Okay, well, I'm very much against people using connectors that are normally used for a particular service in another service. What I'm thinking of is someone who I know rewired an AC outlet and used a 115-volt plug on his amplifier and then wired the amplifier for 220 and then rewired the plug for 220. His wife came in and plugged in the vacuum cleaner, and, well, you can imagine what happened. But, we normally assume power poles, the things that we love and hate, to be, 12 to 13 volts DC. And, certainly using them for other voltages without marking them could definitely be a problem. But there you go. But what I've elected to do on these supplies is to remove that ground and to just use the ground at the radio to ground all of the stuff for RF and DC. As I said, for some reason, I think that Astron must have got the enlightenment to do that, because on the switcher supplies, which of course are now later, in design and time-wise, they do not do that. So, interesting. But the old thing came up when we were working on this supply, and I remembered, oh boy, yeah, it's grounded on the negative lead right to the bus, right to the green wire coming through the three-wire plug. And I thought that could perhaps be a problem somewhere long down the line. Back to that, K2ZO.
Okay, very good. Okay, I like your philosophy, and I 100% agree with it. So one of the things I was thinking about, and maybe this kind of answers your question, there's certainly the opportunity, for lack of a better term, to use an Anderson power pole of a different color other than red for, let's say, 3 or 5 volts. And I'm kind of curious what voltage bus people would consider. I'm looking at routers, common household things, and the like. I'm thinking that if I can get a beefy 5-volt bus, it would be really, really good as a way to distribute USB power and the like. You can put it out to hubs and things like that and provide power to hubs and such without too much pain, but also maintain the fusing necessary to maintain safety. The other thing I was thinking about, there's a property of the Anderson power poles besides a variety of colors that comes to mind, and that is that you can offset the orientation of a pin. So what I was thinking of doing is making the black pin in the standard orientation and the color to be named other than red for a 5-volt bus to be offset by 90 degrees, and maybe even 90 degrees out facing. So, in other words, if you're facing the two, you're facing the business end of the connector, not the back end, the cable end, but the nosy end. If you're facing that, and it's red right up, by the way, guys, just to reiterate, if you're facing the butt end of the of a Anderson power pole, it's red right, and the pointy side, the narrow side, if you will, is up. Red right up. So that's number one. So I was thinking of rotating clockwise the red one, so as to avoid this, this hazard as well. So that way, you might try to jam the black one in, that's fine, but you'll never get the red one in because it'll start off life 90 degrees offset. I think that would be good. So even if they're not glued together, they'll just push out. It won't actually enter the connector. And I am thinking in 5 volts in terms of, instead of 3.3, but I'm curious if other people have opinions. Yeah, I've been looking at a lot of routers and a lot of USB devices, and I keep coming back to 5 volts, but I'm curious about that, what people think about my connector idea.
W2JC.
James, go right ahead.
I would tend to the 5 volts for standardization because you can always drop down to 3. If you have 3, it's a little harder to bring it back up to 5. As far as the color, the first thing that would come to mind would be dark green because that matches the resistor color code for 5. But dark green in the electrical code is ground, so that wouldn't be such a bright idea, I guess. Second, I would choose a blue. I don't know why exactly, but I would. Howard?
Okay. Very good. That's interesting. That's most interesting. All right. Anybody else? And by the way, don't feel too bad. The hot is black in AC land, so I'm not so sure we have to fret over the green issue, but good point.
AC2, you got it?
Mr. Paul, go right ahead.
Yeah, the sort of electrical codes generally say that, don't use green for anything other than earth. For most cases with DC, like you say, it's always blue. If you need a color that you don't want to use blue, I would probably tend towards the bright. At that point, then you're not quite black, but it's showing that you are actually lower. For the bus, I would actually go with the 5 volts, just because with a lot of the LEDs, like things like blue, they're going to trigger a threshold voltage of like 3.3 volts. So if you've got something that needs a little bit higher, just to get over that, then, you might as well have 5 and 7, as they say. Back to that.
Okay, that's good advice. I like that. I'm going to be a little contrary about brown, because discerning brown from black for a lot of people could be miserable. I'm going to hold off on my own ideas other than generally commenting. I like the idea about 5. That's good. I think your logic makes sense. Anybody else? Okay, so let me throw out this. If we want to avoid green, because green must be earth ground in the random world of real life people, which I can generally respect and resonate with. How would people feel about white for 5 volts?
Comment.
Jim, go right ahead.
Okay. you get into the problem that we always got into in instrumentation, which was my livelihood. And when you had the electricians who were running, AC, black was not ground, it was hot, and white was ground. Okay, now you are trying to marry the instrumentation to the AC power, and you couldn't believe what would happen. White was used for signals from analyzers, and black, of course, was ground, and people would hook this stuff up backwards and fry $30,000 analyzers. So we had a standing rule. Electricians were not allowed to touch the instrumentation panel. And what we did is we put in a marshalling panel with all terminal strips that they just ran to, and then we would go in and do all the right hookups. And it saved us thousands of dollars.
I think that makes good sense. So I think if people saw red and white, or red and black, they would know what to do. If they saw red, black, and black and white, that could be considered ambiguous. So, and we know not to buy into green, because that's earth ground. So, I'm kind of thinking maybe blue or yellow, and 5 volts. But you know, give me an idea about green, about blue or yellow. For that matter, should they go as a pair to be unambiguously associated with a 5-volt circuit, where let's say the blue is the, if you will, ground, and the yellow is the hot, or vice versa, or should it be, should one of those colors, like maybe the yellow since it's brighter, or blue because it's just something different, be paired with black so that all grounds are ground? All the leaves are brown, but all the grounds are ground, or all the blacks are ground, whatever. I'm just being a little too cute here. So any thoughts, anybody?
You're still going to have people get confused when they look at it, unless you've, as you said, set the power poles in a configuration that they couldn't be plugged in the standard way. Of course, you know, you could always go to Dean connectors. I don't know if you're very familiar with them, but that would then give people a clue that there's a different voltage there.
What are those connectors called again?
Deans, D-E-A-N-S, I guess it's called, Deans connectors. Take a look at them.
Deans connectors, okay, very good. By the way, if anyone's listening, Mr. Jim in particular, NS2K, the login of Pi with the password of Raspberry worked fine, and StartX loaded the graphical user interface, which is kind of neat. A little strange on a 9-inch monitor, but it does work. All right, carrying on here. Let's see. I think, so here's what I'm thinking. I'm